This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Dr. Joel Diamond. Joel's a family medicine physician who has spent a ton of time thinking about and talking about direct-to-consumer genetic testing and sort of how it impacts consumers, patients, and the physicians that work with families and patients and so forth. Joel, can you take a moment and introduce yourself? Then I'm going to ask you how you got so interested in this area and a number of other questions about genetic testing and direct-to-consumer genetic testing specifically.
Sure, and thank you, Scott. I'm glad to be here today. So as you mentioned, I've been practicing family medicine outside of Pittsburgh going on about 30 years or so, but I've also been involved in medical informatics for a great deal of my career as well. I was involved in some early adoption of electronic medical records for physicians, and then started a company that was involved in health information exchange, basically interoperability between electronic medical records. And this flow of information and how it allows doctors to be better doctors has always been fascinating to me. A few years ago, one of my colleagues and I started a company involved in getting genetic information directly to the point of care so doctors like myself can start benefiting from some of these insights, whether it was to identify patients who might need genetic testing or patients that had unrecognized genetic diseases, or even the simple things like prescribing medicines and knowing that there was a genetic component to how people metabolized medicines differently. And so this has been my basis of understanding of this. And, you know, one other area has been just a lot of the interest in susceptibility to diseases like cancer. So as I mentioned, my background in health information technology, it's almost unconscionable for me to think that in this day and age, a patient who's had a marked family history of breast and ovarian cancer, our systems that we have in place really don't inform doctors ahead of time to say maybe this patient has a genetic trait and deserves a more aggressive counseling or screening for that disease. So for all these reasons, this sits squarely in my lap as a primary care doctor today.
Well, thank you so much. And there's so many different questions to talk about. Let's follow up on one of the things you just mentioned. So we're talking right now about sort of direct consumer genetic testing and genetic testing. You had mentioned, you know, with ovarian cancers and so forth, testing for, I think, what's called the BRCA gene. There's other tests for Lynch syndrome and so forth. What are some of the most useful purposes for genetic testing? I mean, everybody hears about it in the 23andMe, but they hear about it almost in the sense of front page of the Wall Street Journal or front page of the National Enquirer about it led somebody to meet their relative who's got this problem and they never did. They had this brother-in-law or stepsister or whatever it might be. But there's very real uses now increasingly for the genetic testing. Talk to us about some of the real use cases and why it's so important to be guided by a physician.
Yeah, and it's a great question. I mean, certainly the BRCA gene susceptibility has been a double-edged sword for us. Anything that leads to more awareness has been great. On the other hand, patients sort of reaching out to directed to consumer testing and then saying, well, what do we do with these results? And the expectations of that direct-to-consumer testing has been a significant problem to date. So I think people have confused the sort of 23andMe traits, my susceptibility to liking coffee or will my hair be curly and those kinds of things, to really affecting some medical interventions has been a problem to date. So the other part of the problem is BRCA is just one piece of the breast cancer and ovarian cancer inheritance pattern. So that gene by itself may not be enough. And some people with a more recognized family history may be more susceptible to lots of different types of cancer and a broader cancer screening panel, genetic panel, might be in order for those people. So it is, as I said earlier, the double-edged sword. I think that there are some other low-hanging fruits, though, and I mentioned the area of pharmacogenomics in particular, that I think people are just starting to wake up to, both patients on the direct-to-consumer side as well as physicians.
And talk about that for a moment, because it's fascinating to me in watching sort of the now accelerated growth of precision medicine, how the understanding of it, take the consumer out of it, but from the medical community is still very all over the board and great variance amongst physicians and what they understand about precision medicine and how quickly it's moving in certain areas.
Yeah, it's a common dilemma of new technology. You know, on one hand, you know, the amount of genetics, if I look back, that I learned in medical school was a very, very brief course. I have a son who's in medical school right now, and although his genetics teaching has expanded and the knowledge has increased since then, it still hasn't woven its way mainstream into the curriculum. So we see doctors being more aware of genomic conditions. On the other hand, their willingness to work those up and treat them has often been, well, I recognize that, so I'm going to refer the patient to a genetic counselor. This is made even worse by the fact that there is a dearth of genetic counselors in the United States right now. So there's oftentimes a huge bottleneck to get those patients to the next phase of this. And in reality, many of those patients don't follow up with that specialist for that reason. So this directly belongs in the hands of primary care doctors and specialists who treat these many types of diseases right now, but they're somewhat ill-prepared to do that. And that's the, in my opinion, very slow changing paradigm that's happening right now.
You had talked about the different pharmaceuticals and how they work differently with different people and how genetic testing is so important to figuring out what the precise mix works for a certain person and what won't work. There are certain types of treatments that, you know, will there be a time where precision medicine is so important that it'll make certain things, whether radiation or surgeries of certain types, feel sort of very primitive compared to what's going on in the future? Any sense of that?
Well, we certainly have seen that in the cancer space in the last couple of years. The idea that not that long ago that we identified cancers and treated them based on their anatomical presentation has now been thoroughly shaken up. We recognize that there's a molecular basis of cancer, and many of the new drugs that consumers see advertised on TV, those exciting drugs, which have really changed the face of many, many cancers that we thought were incurable a while ago, are not based on the anatomical presentation of that cancer, but rather the genetics, the molecular findings. So we're already seeing that in area.
So help me for a layperson, Dr. Diamond, because I think I know exactly what you mean when you see, I can't even pronounce anatomical, but the concept being when it shows up as a tumor, that's a symptom, really. I mean, it's bad, but it's a symptom. It's the underlying things that are going on with the genetics and the DNA, that the molecular level that's caused that problem. And so the new therapies are really trying to treat it and at the underlying basis, not the symptom, but in layman's terms.
Yeah, so we look at these new drugs and how they work. The DNA of the cancer is fascinating. It is very different than the DNA, the pairs of genes that we inherited from our parents. And that DNA kind of has a mind of its own. So that tumor, when we talk about mutating and changing over time, it's really the DNA inside of that tumor that's outwitting the typical drugs that we've given in the past. And what we do know now that chemotherapy that was effective for breast cancer, let's say, we now know that these new therapies, which are targeted on the sequencing, when we take the tumor, we send it to a lab, we have a genetic lab sequence the DNA and uncode it that's very unique to that tumor. We find variants, mutations within that DNA, and we target a drug based on that particular gene variant that we see. And it has very little to do with whether this was a breast cancer or this was a lung cancer or it was a prostate cancer or colon cancer. It has to do whether there's that particular, I'll call it a biomarker present, and we treat it that way and very, very effectively.
I mean, it's really amazing to see certain kinds of cancer, and you could comment on this farther than I have. There's almost very little progress in the last 20, 30 years. I mean, a lot of progress on the detection side in certain things, but the amount of progress, for example, in areas like brain cancer and so forth, there was almost no progress for 25, 30 years, and now there's remarkable progress based on exactly what you're talking about, is my impression.
Well, you know, it's incredible. A few years ago, I remember traveling, and a colleague of mine called me and had a friend that had a devastating melanoma in her eye, and out of desperation was asking if I knew centers in the States where they could be treated. And I called one of the oncologists I knew, and he said, I can't talk right now. I'm literally getting on a plane to go to a big oncology conference, but we're just talking about this new treatment that's come around for these types of melanomas that are based on genetic findings. And it's amazing, since that phone call, even the treatment of things like melanoma, which we basically thought was one of the more deadliest types of cancer, skin cancers that you can get, that's been an area where there's real hope and a very, very large shift in treatment and actually cure rates of people with that type of cancer. So we're seeing that shift in lots of areas, certain types of lung cancer, certainly breast and ovarian cancer, other GI cancers as well. So these are exciting times. The more exciting times are taking this kind of information beyond the cancer space and starting it to apply to lots of other areas in medicine, whether they be rare diseases or common diseases that we see every day.
Thank you. Let me ask you another question. You're a brilliant family medicine physician. You've also got a broad mind that is interested in a lot of areas. What are you doing in this space now? Are you doing something entrepreneurially in this space as well?
Yeah, so as I mentioned at the beginning, we started a company a few years ago called To Be Precise. And the value of that is bringing these types of insights to the point of care. So they can be in the oncology space, as I talked before. So making an oncologist better informed that there are genetic variants and there's new science so they can inform them. Letting a doctor and a primary care facility taking care of a patient who might be on their second or third antidepressant treatment for a patient that's not working, and informing them that the previous two or three drugs that they prescribed never had a chance of working because they were rapid metabolizers of those antidepressants based on the patient's genetics. And here are some other medications which would be more appropriate than that. Or taking a subspecialty like cardiology, recognizing that a patient who has an abnormal heart rhythm and diagnosing and working that up, that it actually has a genetic basis to it. And not only does it inform on how that patient should be treated, but has huge implications for that patient's family members who also may be at risk for that particular condition. So
let me ask you,
sure.
Another question, because I want to ask you another substantive question, but I do want to ask you first so the audience can hear, the name of your company and where do people learn more about your company and what you're doing? And then I want to ask you another substantive question about cardiovascular versus oncology and so forth.
Sure, and I thank you for that. So the company's name is To Be Precise, and anybody that wants to learn a little bit more of it, about that would love to direct them to our website, which is tobeprecisehealth.com.
Well, thank you. And I encourage our audience to do so. The precision medicine area is something we've been following for a decade. Just the last 3 to 5 years, and even more recently, that's starting to have huge impacts on the treatment of cancers for sure and other diseases as well. But another question, Dr. Diamond. Oncology cancer deaths are going in the right direction, meaning they're starting to see some reduction in those based on a whole number of behavioral things, early detection things, and precision medicine. Cardiovascular health, in contrast, there doesn't seem to be that kind of improvement in our country yet. Is that due to social determinants, diet, other kinds of things, and they're harder to attack like this? Or where's the divergence between those are the two leading causes of death in our country, cardiovascular disease and cancers, oncology? What's the distinction in the treatment of those two?
Well, it's interesting. You're getting to the crux of some of the realities and I'll say false expectations of where precision medicine may be. So we have to keep in mind that genetic predisposition is exactly that. It's not a pre-programmed absolute. So the fact that you may be born with a certain gene does not mean that you're going to exhibit that trait. And not only that, there are many factors that also may contribute to turning a gene on and off. So we talk about polygenic risk, and that means that for cardiovascular disease, we know things like smoking and lack of exercise are as important as is family history. And that's why all those things, social habits, family history, underlying conditions, all go into the taking of a good history and physical that every medical student learns and plays a hand in that. Having said that, some of those things interact with each other. So we do know that people with a polygenic, meaning many, many different risk factors combined with some known genetic pieces, that we can more accurately identify patients who are more likely to have a heart attack and maybe need to have more aggressive prevention, meaning maybe they need to be put on a statin drug to lower their cholesterol more aggressively. In addition to that, there are monogenetic diseases. So that means there is a gene that causes a bad condition that contributes to that. So one in 200 or so people that have high cholesterol actually have an abnormal gene that causes them to have a familial form of high cholesterol. And those people are at much, much higher risk of having heart attacks. And in fact, very aggressive treatment of those patients can lead to substantial decrease in cardiovascular mortality. So that's where you start moving the needle when you can start stratifying populations much better. I'll give you one other flavor of this. Patients that have had a heart attack or have had a cardiac event, almost all are put on the standard of care anyway, is to put them on an antiplatelet drug. Clopidogrel is sort of the standard drug that people are on. About 20% of the population is sort of immune to that drug. And the reason for that is they have a genetic factor that causes them to break that drug down very, very rapidly. And in fact, identifying those patients would prevent a whole bunch more people from having a recurrent cardiac event and returning to the hospital. So we can start making inroads into cardiovascular prevention and to decreasing cardiovascular morbidity and mortality by applying some of these known genetic factors to this beyond the complicated polygenic piece that I talked about earlier.
Fascinating. So an exciting, exciting time in precision medicine and genetic testing. And at the end of the day, the genetic counseling that's needed, and I had the chance to visit the genetic counselor of a genetic mutation in our family, so I understand exactly what you're talking about, how you can't really go at this without some serious medical advice and a genetic counselor as part of that, because you can't really, you can't really as an individual, I certainly couldn't as an individual, figure out what to do with the data once you have the data. And that seems to be, Dr. Diamond, a great deal of the point that your company's about, that you're making.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true, that there needs to be more understanding of what to do with the information. On the other hand, I'd be remiss not to say that some of this information is well within the bounds of what doctors do every day. Listen, doctors make complex decisions about treatment with patients all the time. And we sit down with patients and we talk about the pros and cons of treatment versus not treatment or alternative treatments all the time. And I think there are many, many areas of precision medicine, pharmacogenomics is one of them, that are well within the bounds of what doctors do all the time. They need a little bit of help and decision support at time. They may need a little additional education. What I believe, and you know, my company's really dedicated to this, is they need a little help at the point of care from the information technology that they have at their fingertips to help them do this. And then I think we could have a much more efficient use of the genetic counselors that are already, as I mentioned earlier, a rare commodity.
Fascinating. Well, I tell you, it's a fascinating growth area. It seems to me very much a huge part of the future of medicine and care. I appreciate, Dr. Diamond, you spending time with us in the Becker's Healthcare Podcast today, and we greatly appreciate your time joining us. It's just really fascinating. Thank you very much.
Appreciate being here. Thanks for the great questions.